Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR1, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lum, and on today's show, we have Sally Wentworth. She's the CEO of the Internet Society, as well as the Internet Society Foundation. And she's here to talk about all things ISOC and priorities for 2025. Hey, Sally, welcome to Bite Marks Cafe.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You know, and I'm excited to have you here. And, you know, Sally, you're actually here in Hawaii as a result of the Pacific Telecommunications Conference. So I'm thrilled that you're not, you know, making a long distance call. I mean, you're calling me right here in Hawaii. And, you know, we got to meet at the conference and, you know, it was quite a thrill for me just to have, you know, the CEO of the Internet Society here in town. So I'm really happy that you made it all the way here. And I hope you had a, you know, good experience here in Hawaii.
It's been great so far. PTC 25 is a tremendous event, bringing the industry and a lot of different players together who care about connectivity in the Pacific. And so it's been a tremendous week. And tomorrow I get to head out of the conference and see a bit of Hawaii and see some of the network infrastructure that we've been supporting. So it's a great week.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to, you know, to do that tomorrow as well. But you know, before we get into the, you know, sort of like the meat of the Internet Society, I want to have you share a little bit about your background. What is the journey that you've charted to now become, you know, CEO of the Internet Society?
Yeah, sure. So I began my career in the internet environment at the U.S. State Department. Mm-hmm. I joined the Office of Communications and Information Policy right at the time when the United Nations was taking up issues of the information society for the very first time. And so I was part of the team that helped negotiate the two documents that came out of the World Summit on the Information Society in 2003 and in 2005, which really set the international community, the political community, on the path towards issues related to the information society. So everything from human rights to cybersecurity to internet governance, cultural diversity, all the things that at the time people were excited about. They mm-hmm. saw all the opportunities and didn't really understand. So I got my career started there, and I was there for a number of years, and then I went on to the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, where I focused on domestic internet and telecommunications policy, mm-hmm. Everything from spectrum auctions to internet governance to regulatory action. Net neutrality was just becoming a term of art during that time frame. And it was just a tremendous honor and experience to do that work. And then I had the opportunity to come to the Internet Society, and I had encountered the Internet Society during my days at the State Department, mm-hmm. and I saw it as an organization that understood the Internet, that cared about growing the Internet for everyone, and I remember thinking even back then that it would be so cool if I could work someday for an organization like that, and sure enough, I had the opportunity. So I joined the Internet Society about 15 years ago and have worked in policy roles and management roles for the last 15 years, really trying to use my skills as a public advocate to develop the policies and regulations across the globe that would support an open Internet for everyone. And then just about 3 months ago, maybe a little over 3 months ago, I was honored to take on the role of Internet Society CEO in September. So it's been quite a ride.
Yeah. And, you know, you've been involved for the last 15 years. During that period of time when you kind of first started, was it at the point when I think there was a lot of interest, I think maybe during the Obama administration where they were doing a lot of the kind of recognition of broadband as being important. I think there was a program called BTOP. Were you familiar with that mm-hmm. at the time?
Yeah, I was familiar with that. That was a little bit after my time in the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. I know that the Obama administration and frankly subsequent administrations have been focused on broadband deployment and getting the internet deployed across the United States and in regions that don't have it. It's you know, something that every country needs to prioritize, and the U.S. is no different. And Obama did come in with that as a major focus.
So, you know, when you got involved with the Internet Society at that point in time, was the Internet Society Foundation already formed, or is that something kind of new? And maybe, you know, a little bit of the relationship between the two.
Sure. So the Internet Society Foundation is actually relatively new. It's about 5 years old that we stood that up, and it's a supporting organization of the Internet Society. So it's part of us, and it carries out a number of different functions, including all of our training and empowerment work is provided through the Internet Society Foundation. All that capacity building that we can speak about later. Mm-hmm. It's also the place where we have our philanthropic arm, and that's the part of the Internet Society that contributes funding in the form of grants to communities and projects all across the globe that are aligned with our mission and our strategy. And we're really proud of the Internet Society Foundation since its beginning, since 5 years ago. It's given out over $63 million in grants to projects all across the world. So we're excited about the impact that the foundation enables us to have.
Well, you know, the Internet Society has always been one of the organizations that I had always looked up to. And you know, even back in, I think in 1995, I went to an Internet Society conference that was held here in Hawaii.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, that was my first exposure. And back then, it was really a force for good. And I always felt that, you know, what comes of the Internet is got to be a good thing. Now, of course, we're 30 years later, and I'm sure there's, you know, a lot to be debated whether how good or, you know, is it. But, you know, I think the fact that the Internet Society was formed with the intent of trying to make sure that it does continue to be a force for good, the Internet being a force for good.
Yeah.
So I totally believe that. Now, Sally, you know, our listeners might not realize that the top level domain like .com and .gov .org is really kind of like a key thing that is part of the Internet Society, and it's sort of funding source, right?
Yeah, that's right. And if I can just go back a minute for what you were saying about the Internet as a force for good, you know, the Internet Society was formed over 30 years ago by the sort of fathers, so to speak, of mm-hmm. the Internet, Vint Cerf and Bob Kahn and John Postel. And they wanted an organization that would support the development of open standards through the Internet Engineering Task Force. But they also wanted an organization that believed that the Internet is for everyone. Mm-hmm. And that is the vision of the Internet Society. And that the Internet should grow and develop as a force for good in the world, like you said. And that has been our overriding vision for over 30 years. And in those early days, as you said, in the 90s, one of the things that the Internet Society did was organize these INETs around the world. And yes, there was one here in Hawaii,
right,
where some of the first connections to the Internet outside of the United States were developed and people came online. So it's quite a history that we cherish. But getting to your question about .org, a significant source of Internet Society funding comes through our subsidiary, the Public Interest Registry.
Mm-hmm.
And the Public Interest Registry runs and manages an exemplary registry for .org. And organizations and charities and nonprofits and others around the world use .org as their digital presence. And PIR is a fantastic organization that runs that top-level registry in the public interest. And a portion of the revenue from each domain registered in .org comes to fund the Internet Society and the work we do to ensure that everyone is connected to an open and secure internet.
Well, you know, I feel good that a lot of my domains are .org. So the money is going to a good cause. Now, Sally, I do want to get into some of the, you know, the mission and priorities of the Internet Society. So we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back at this short break to continue our conversation with Sally Wentworth, CEO of the Internet Society and the Internet Society Foundation. This is Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. I'm Bert Lum. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Sally Wentworth. She's the CEO of the Internet Society and the Internet Society Foundation. And she's here to talk about some of the priorities for the ISOC in 2025. And Sally, you know, right before the break, you know, we're talking about maybe the sort of like how the Internet Society, it's kind of fundingsource.org. I mean, that's a really important resource. And as I mentioned, you know, a lot of my websites are all .org. Now, from an organizational standpoint, maybe you can share a little bit about, you know, what are some of the key things that you would consider the sort of the mission of ISOC? And I know you folks just completed your five-year strategic plan. So what are some of the highlights of that, and where do you see sort of like the key priorities focusing in this sort of 2025 and perhaps the next 5 years or so?
So we did. We just adopted our five-year strategy, Strategy 2030, and we have two key strategic goals within that strategy. The first is that people everywhere have access to an affordable, reliable, and resilient internet. And second, that people everywhere have an internet experience that is safe, secure, and protects them online. So those two strategic goals really guide the work of the Internet Society around the world over the next 5 years. And it will that's what unifies all of our training programs, our giving programs, and everything really bubbles up to support those two strategic goals. We then have a series of programs that follow out of those goals related specifically to affordability, reliability, and global connectivity. And then we also have programs where we focus on security and safety and advocacy and policy advocacy around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And importantly to all of this is the Internet Society is a great organization. We have fantastic staff in ISOC and in the foundation, but we can't do this as a staff organization. The way the Internet Society works is through its global community.
Mm-hmm.
So we have over 133,000 individual members. If anybody here is listening and cares about this mission, you can sign up and be a member of the Internet Society. We have over 125 chapters of volunteers all around the world, and we have organization members and partners who are committed to the mission of the Internet Society and join with us in carrying out that mission. So we're really, I think, fortunate and unique in the ability to activate a global community around these goals and take them at from this high level that I described into a very almost hyper-local level. So that's, I think, an interesting kind of special sauce for the Internet Society that will enable us to deliver big things against the strategic plan over the next 5 years.
And Sally, you know, in terms of the scope and the geographic sort of coverage that the Internet Society has taken on, it's really the globe, as you just mentioned. I mean, it's yeah. worldwide, and many of the places that you probably find yourself are developing countries where the internet perhaps isn't hasn't as proliferated as much as it has in the United States. So, you know, where do you find yourself spending a lot of your time from a geography standpoint?
So, yeah, we are, as you said, all over the world. We do have staff in 32 countries, which is a tremendous advantage, gives us a vantage point into all different continents and local communities. And then, as I said, this network of chapters even takes that reach further. We have focused over the last years in infrastructure deployments across Africa, certainly across Latin America, Central Asia, Southeast Asia, mm-hmm. with a particular focus in the next 5 years in taking that experience and moving into some least developed countries and small island developing states. And so one of the reasons I was here this week at PTC was to connect with that Pacific Islands community, both the industry, but also governments and other stakeholders who are focused on infrastructure and development in the Pacific. So, mm-hmm. You know, for us, it's we have a presence in a lot of places. We've deployed over 64 internet exchange points in the last 5 years across those regions that I described. So it's hard to pick a single place. Mm-hmm. We've done deployments here in the United States, and as I said earlier, here in Hawaii with local communities. So, but you know, as we try to focus our efforts, that work in the least developed countries and small islands is exciting and kind of a new frontier for us.
No, that's great. And you know, one of the areas that in my day job, you know, we've been trying to find some of these affordability programs. And the FCC, you know, they had their affordable connectivity program. And you mentioned affordability in one of the mm-hmm. sort of your priorities. How do you see the Internet Society helping with the issue of affordability?
So one of the places that we look at, we run a site, actually a measurement platform called Pulse. PULSE.internetsociety.org, where we're pulling measurement data from across the internet and packaging it up into country reports and indexes that people can use to look at the state of the internet in their country and determine kind of where the gaps might be, where investment might be needed, and where they're already excelling and have a really solid platform to build from. So we use that data ourselves. And one of the things that we look at very carefully is the amount of content that's hosted locally in a country. In many developing countries and least developed countries, what happens is that the content that people want, whether it's a government website or Facebook or, you know, any, think of your favorite website or content, mm-hmm. is actually hosted outside the country. And so when you want to access it, you are using international transit to get that content and bring it back to the user, which is both expensive and not very reliable and not very resilient. If you've got a cable cut or you've got other disruptions along that path, then you're not going to get to the content you want, and it's certainly not going to be a high-quality connection, and it will be very expensive.
Right. Right.
So on the basis of that, what we do is we work with the local community. This is a big way that we look at connectivity, is that we want to empower the local communities to identify the gaps. And in this case, how do we bring more content back to the country to be hosted locally? We want to see 50% of content hosted locally. That's our kind of target. And we found that internet exchanges in markets that have more than three operators is a way to bring traffic together and basically expand the connectivity pie for everybody. And then it becomes an attractive site for content to come back home.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
we work with the community on technical training, capacity building, ensuring that they have the expertise and even the governance expertise to manage an internet exchange point. And then we might come in with some seed funding to help purchase the equipment and enable them to get that exchange up and running for the long run. So it's a bit of a cycle, but if you start at those urban areas and get affordable, reliable, resilient connectivity there, get the content hosted locally, then what we can do is look to more rural communities that are removed from that connectivity and then come up with strategies for those hard-to-reach communities to connect them to the connectivity that's in the country.
Now, Sally, I think you touched on this, working globally but still having a very local impact. But I want to explore that a little bit more. I want to hold that thought. We'll be right back at this short break to continue our conversation with Sally Wentworth, CEO of the Internet Society and the Internet Society Foundation, and talking about the priorities for ISOC in 2025. This is Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum, right here at Hawaii Public Radio, HPR1. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Sally Wentworth, CEO of the Internet Society and the Internet Society Foundation, and here to talk about some of the priorities for ISOC in 2025. And Sally, right before the break, you were talking about the work that the Internet Society supports, especially in nations, I guess, that are looking at building infrastructure and building capacity. And I think you were describing about looking at ways that traffic can be, routed in a way that makes best use of the sort of international and perhaps, trans-Pacific links that connect them. Now, with that in mind, how do you also support some of the local sort of implementations of things like community broadband networks? Because I think that is an area that got me directly involved with the Internet Society. And some of these community broadband networks, they're kind of geared more for, sort of like communities that don't necessarily fit into the model of, like the ISP running fiber along the
right.
suburb, and you got a mailbox, so they're going to run fiber to your house.
Right.
But these are communities that may have sprung up because they're living in a more sort of communal way, right? And so, how does that kind of community broadband network fit into your overall strategy to help connect sort of like these nation states and players that can be at a high level, at a nation level, but then still at a very community, local level?
This is one of the things that we're really proud of. We have a community-centered connectivity approach that works for, as I mentioned earlier, the internet exchange points,
mm-hmm.
Ensuring that the local community is managing that infrastructure for themselves, but also extending that out to communities, as you said, that are hard to reach for any number of reasons. And we believe that with the right training, with capacity building, some community building, and then eventually some technology and financial support, local communities like those can connect themselves to the internet. They don't have to wait around for them to fit into the traditional broadband model that you described. And this is a model that we've been deploying in communities across the globe, here in Hawaii, elsewhere in the United States, and indigenous communities and beyond that, across Africa and elsewhere. And really what it is investing first and foremost in the community, working with the community, understanding what the gaps are, what's the anchor for this connectivity, is it a school or a hospital or a local council or an industry, or, you know, there's any number of motivations. Mm-hmm. But those motivations come from the community, not from us. And what is that? And understanding what the barriers might be to connectivity, whether they're financial or technical or skills. Because what's really, really important to us is that if the local communities are going to connect themselves to the internet, we want to ensure that they have the expertise, the training, all of those resources so that once the connectivity is in, they can maintain it and sustain it over the long run and hopefully grow it into, you know, a more sustainable, financially sustainable model that's not dependent necessarily on grants or the like. And so it's a lot of community building and technical training, capacity building that we try to provide, because, you know, this is, you know, it's solving an immediate connectivity challenge, but it's also a bit about a talent pipeline, mm-hmm, right? And building technical skills in communities that might be too far to get those skills at a university or somewhere else. And it's quite practical hands-on experience that people are getting because they're running infrastructure. And so that's the model that we use. We work with the community for them to define what they need. We then help try to source some of that training, whether it's through us or partners. And then eventually when they're ready, we have a grant program that people can apply for grants to support either funding a backhaul or other kinds of equipment that will make that community successful.
So what you're describing, Sally, I mean, really kind of depends also on the network of chapters, right? Now we can talk about chapters on another occasion because we're kind of running to the end of the show. But I'm happy to hear that there are a couple of, you know, community broadband networks here. There's already kind of a in-place sort of momentum that I think has been there because of the Internet Society, and I think we can continue to build upon that and continue this relationship with the Internet Society. So, Sally, where can people find more information about the Internet Society?
You can find us at internetsociety.org.
Very good, and I'll put that up on our show notes for later. Sally Wentworth is a CEO of the Internet Society and the Internet Society Foundation. Great, great organization to be a part of. And of course, I want to thank you, Sally, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk about the Partnership in Climate Tech Conference. If you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HBR One every Friday or anytime via the HBR app or your favorite podcast application. In the meantime, you stay safe, you stay awesome. We'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.